whatever became of me. I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. Cincinnati WKRP.
You are listening pretty late, and we're so glad that you're joining us tonight. I am thrilled to welcome on the air with us right now, Lonnie Anderson, who I just told her a moment ago I would try very hard not to geek out, but apparently I've already set the premise. We are thrilled.
You know what? Flattering, though, and I appreciate it.
Oh, everyone that I've told, and here was the thing. I told a lot of my friends I was going to interview you today, and they're like, oh, my God, can I come? And I said, she's on the phone, and they were like, never mind, because they really want to see you. But your voice alone has already just warmed my heart. I've been watching episodes of WKRP, including the bomb threat episode and the explosive affair. Yes.
We love to talk to radio stations because our entire, since we began in 1978, being about radio, we love visiting radio stations. So over the years, it's part of the biggest thrill because that's what we were. We were a radio station, and certainly it has evolved, and people still like to listen to the radio.
Oh, no doubt about it. And the character of Jennifer was just something that I don't think people even realize the power that you carried. Maybe they did, but power.
You know, maybe not young people today. They don't realize that in 1978, when we started, glamorous women were not on comedies, for one thing.
Right.
And certainly the blonde in the room wasn't the smartest person, which Jennifer was.
Indeed.
And they'd be surprised to hear that pretty people and glamorous people were just not taken seriously in 1978.
And that was on television. Do you want to talk at all about what that was like off camera in your real life?
Off camera, I was a serious brunette actress who came from the stage, never imagining that I would be this blonde bombshell person. I mean, that was like the furthest thing from my imagination. And to think that people treated me differently once my hair color changed, like my brains dissolved with the bleach or something, it was just shocking to me because I had been that serious brunette theater actress. And so I was always fighting against this type. I never wanted to be the dumb blonde. I never wanted to be window dressing or the, I went in with a chip on my shoulder into the audition for WKRP, basically saying, I don't want to be the here are your messages person.
And Jennifer grew in that character. Did you have any influence on the way she was written? Because I just saw the scene where he's asking her to go get coffee, and you say, I don't take dictation. We already agreed on
it. Right. It was funny. I went in for the audition basically telling them I didn't want the part. my agent had said to me, well, go in. This is MTM. They might want you for something else. So I was like on my little soapbox. And Hugh Wilson, who created the show, and Grant Tinker, married to Mary Tyler Moore and the head of MTM, they said, well, you know what? If you don't like it, how would you like to do it? And I was so shocked and taken aback because I wasn't prepared for them to say, okay, tell us. And so I thought I had embarrassed myself. I went to my car. I cried. I went back. Nobody had cell phones. Went back to my house and got a call and said, you got the part.
Wow.
And Hugh Wilson, he's just a genius. So he was the one who said, let's make her look like Lon Turner and be the smartest person in the room. So,
and there were elements of Mae West to her as well, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes, very much. And I loved it. I mean, I loved being, I never wore black. I always wore color. She was, it was much more planned than I think people had imagined. And also, we were in a time where in the South, I blew a kiss to Tim Reed through the glass of the booth, and we got hate mail.
Oh, I can imagine.
And so Tim and I, of course, ever after made sure that we were in contact physically with one another for every show after that. They wanted to ban us. They could, and too bad. But
right.
Well, the show took a stand. We dealt with serious subjects, even for being a comedy. The Who concert fiasco and people dying, that took actually took place in Cincinnati. So Hugh said, we cannot, we're a radio station. We cannot not deal with this in an episode. And so the show won a lot of Humanitas awards because we did deal with issues, with current issues.
Well, and that's something that I think was a hallmark of so many comedy sitcoms in the 1970s. In particular, when you watch like a multi-camera comedy now, it's not quite the same thing as what I think so many of you brought to life and touched on at a time when it wasn't that easy. In particular, when it was, you know, I just saw the episode where Tim Reed says, I can't remember the boss's name. I know there's Herb, there's Les.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Carlson. That's why, because it's a big guy, right? He goes, what's the deal with him? He has asked me if I wanted a watermelon. And
I know. There was racism that was dealt with. Payola was dealt with.
Right.
We had the preacher on the show. It was very... we dealt with Jerry Falwell was very much in the news at the time. And concert promotion now that radio stations do, we dealt with that. And crazy, crazy rock people who are insane.
And overnight people, that's my sweet spot. So it makes me laugh because I am the overnight. I'm the 11 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Well, there you are. You're like Venus flytrap.
Exactly.
And you know, we were bucking the system all the time. We got memos. And now when you think of what's on television, it's so shocking. I mean, I got memos if the studio was too cold and my nipples showed.
Right.
And
there had to be a meeting about it and a whole...
Dr. Tommy Fever was growing a marijuana plant in his apartment.
Right.
And he always put the shade down over it. And I don't know if anybody ever even tumbled to that in the... executive suite.
Oh, man. So much stuff that I think that people, you know, and what's great is it's all available online and people are starting to reconnect with those shows and how they have an impact. And really the humor, again, whether, as you mentioned, it's race or gender, workplace, relationships.
We even had Les on a ledge. We had Sanders accused of being gay. I mean, it's very timely. Hugh Wilson said, I don't want it to be a joke show. I want the comedy to come out of the story. And it just was way ahead of its time, I think.
Oh, and the way, but here's the thing too, is as much as the it wasn't jokes, it was all organic. It felt that way because I was just listening, even the way you delivered lines, it's just so, there's an elegance to it and authenticity. It was wonderful.
Oh, well, I loved it and I loved everybody in it and we mourn the passing of the big guy. But the rest of us all stay in touch, email, phone calls. We even try and have lunch, you know, a couple times a year. And then if there's a show like is coming up, unfortunately, I'm going to be there at this
Wizard World
show by myself. I don't have my gang.
Oh,
but we just love to be together, real family. And that happens rarely, I think, in show business where you really love the cast so much that you hate to go home at night.
Oh, so sweet. And I'm imagining you also have a lot of love from fans. Have you had the opportunity to do something like Wizard World, which is coming up in Chicago, for those who aren't familiar yet?
What I love about this, meeting the fans, is because really fan mail is a thing of the past.
Right.
And so you actually get to see people in person. I think it was Kevin Bacon who said recently, you know, what is so bad about people coming up and telling you they love you? I mean, you know, when did that ever become a bad thing? And so when you go to a show like this, people get to tell you. I mean, they quote lines to me, not only from WKRP, from other things that I've been in, and they have favorite things, or they all gathered around the TV. We don't have destination television anymore, but people... in the 70s and 80s, you know, you had to watch it at 9 o'clock on whatever night it was on, and they have family memories of people gathering, and it's fun to hear that. I like hearing from people and hearing what it was that they liked, and knowing that you were a part of that is very exciting.
And as you mentioned, that there are other things that people really love that you did. I remember as well the Jane Mansfield story, which I thought was a great movie.
Oh, thank you very much.
You were lovely in that.
Great experiences in it. And, you know, I've had, luckily enough, a career that I've worked every decade in and done all those television shows and movies and six series and you know, at, so I have great experiences and some crazy experiences and some ones that you'd like to forget. But, you know, it's...
And that's life.
I've had a very lovely career. I just did a pilot for Amazon.
Oh!
And that's a whole new thing for me, streaming television. I come from, you know, the three network, 3 hours of prime time.
Sure.
And now you can see anything you want anytime. And so I love that I'm involved in this evolution. And I have to tell you, in this pilot, everyone is naked and swearing except me.
Oh, dear.
Uh-huh. I know. I'm glad I'm past it. But it's, you know, anything goes on television today and on streaming television.
Gosh, so much has really changed in your career. And you're a Midwestern girl. I didn't realize.
I'm a Minnesota girl. And Chicago is where my first big time, I did my first national commercial out of Chicago with the Shirley Hamilton Agency.
Hey!
I know it.
I had no idea.
And I just loved being there because it was so close.
Sure.
And I would come over and do a play or do a national spot. And then from Chicago, I jumped off to New York, and New York, I jumped over to L.A. So, but I'm a Midwest roots girl.
And your father was an environmental scientist. Is that what I'm reading?
No, talk about ahead of your time.
Yeah.
He was always with those little test tubes and measuring the water. It was all about water. For Dad.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, he was an interesting guy, a scientist with kind of a toe in, I wish I'd been in show business.
Sure. Okay.
So
he was supportive? My apologies.
Go ahead.
No, I was asking, was he supportive then, if he had a toe in kind of wishing he'd been in show business?
He has such a great sense of humor, so he encouraged me to have that sense of humor. My mom played the piano by ear. She'd been a fashion model, gorgeous woman, looked like Rita Hayworth. Oh. And they would put on their own Tonight Show every night with their cocktails.
What?
And cigarettes. And do like they hosted a little talk show around the piano. And so I think we just did improv in our house.
Oh, how lovely.
It was fun.
Oh, and
it was fun and funny and... they weren't too excited about me being an actress for a living because that was scary.
Sure.
And I'm a mom, and I was a teenage divorced mom. Took my daughter to college with me, put myself through school, and I have a nice teaching degree, nice Midwest girl. And then I, you know, I did this all for you, so I have plan B, and now I'm going to go off and be an actress. And I've been an actress since I was 10, but it was more like my hobby than my career.
Such a smart way to go. And I mean, really, you know, when we think about our parents worrying about us, it's remarkable that you made sure that you soothed their concerns, took care of yourself, took care of your daughter, and then, I mean, really became one of the legendary characters in television history.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Again, we've been talking to Lonnie Anderson. She will be at the Wizard World, which is at the Wizard World Comic Con in Rosemont, August 24th through the 27th. And I was wondering, I wanted to ask you a little bit about some of the work that you've done trying to raise awareness for pulmonary disorders. I know that
the COPD,
yes.
Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Been fighting that battle because I've lost both of my parents to smoking related illnesses,
mm-hmm.
and they both had COPD. And my sister and I have, neither of us have ever smoked. And, of course, my parents were dead, my dad at 54.
Oh.
My mom at 60. And so my sister and I talk about how much longer we've lived, and we're sure it's all due to not smoking. And so I was on a whole non-smoking campaign for years, and I did a whole caregiver campaign, connected with different pharmaceutical companies, and so that's been one of my big crusades. And I was just in Chicago. I was at Northwestern doing a play with Mary Lou Henner and Mike Ditka for raising money for Alzheimer's research.
Wow.
And I think that being a celebrity, if you can raise awareness for something and give back, that's the way to do it, especially things that are close to your heart.
Well, and the thing is that being such a recognized actress from WKRP and so many other different projects and having this perspective, I mean, do you have any sense of, as a young Lonnie Anderson, what gave you the presence of mind to, you know that I have to plan a certain way for taking care of my daughter, to make my parents, you know, concerned, sort of be soothed? What would you, I mean, really what I'm asking is, what would you, advice would you give to young people? Because it seems like you really carried yourself in a way that so many people aspire to.
Oh, definitely that, you know, I was lucky because I had wonderful parents. But still to have self-respect and belief in yourself, because certainly to go into show business, there's nothing but rejection. Sure. If you can't get used to rejection and know that, you know, I always think you have to have a little bit of an ego in show business. You have to think, well, it's their loss. I was better than anybody else. And, you know, sure, they lose if they don't cast me. And so you have to have a little bit of that, or you would just be beaten down and go skulking away, which I think a lot of people in show business do. It's my daughter, who is a school administrator, said, I don't know how you even do that, Mom. I just couldn't stand it. She went on one interview when she was little, and she didn't get the job, and she said, "That's it. I'm not going ever again." That was just totally humiliating. And so sometimes I lecture kids going into, like, UCLA, into this theater department, and the first thing you do is get used to rejecting, because you have to be tough to keep going back. You really have to love it.
Do you? I don't know. I don't know if you can teach people how to endure rejection.
You know, it's a tough thing, and you just have to think that you have something to give, and not be embarrassed to give it, and not give up. And I think it's all self-respect, and even if you get bullied or people, you know, you're going to get bad reviews. You're going to get people saying, I remember going on an interview, and attractive is something I always thought I had in the bag. And I went on a reading, and my agent got a call and said, "You're not going to believe this." The guy said, "Well, she's just one of the best young actresses we've seen in ages. It's too bad she's not very attractive." And I was like, what? That was my shoe-in thing. That was my, like, you know, don't worry about it. And so,
oh man, if Lonnie Anderson can't impress somebody with their looks, what chance do the rest of us have?
So then you think, okay, so I, you know, I just have to keep going out there, and I did work for those people again, by the way. you know, you just have to keep trying and keep going. And I see a lot of the same people in our industry, and that's why it's so fun to get together at a show like Wizard World, because, you know, you see other people that have been fighting the good fight for decades, and it's kind of almost like a party, because where else would we all get to see one another and say hello, and you're still here, and you didn't disappear, and you didn't give up, and you didn't fall by the wayside.
Who, just, you know, you don't, not that anyone's listening, but can you tell us off the record? No, obviously on the record, but who was the, let's say, the most troublemaking on the set of WKRP?
Oh, you know, the guys always, because, of course, Jan and I were the only girls, Jan Smithers and I were the only girls on the set, and the guys, especially Howard, I would say, and Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Gary, I think, not Gordon, he was always the big daddy peacekeeper, but Hugh Wilson would say to us on Monday morning at the table read, "Could you guys just read it once the way I wrote it before you start giving me all of your ideas and rewrites and stuff like that?" And because there were a lot of talented people that came from improv, Frank Bonner and Howard, Richard Sands, everybody had something, you know, you get to know your character really well, and you have something to say about them.
And, oh, indeed.
So, you know, everybody's a writer.
Well, and
the
even
guys used to join the writing, you know, after we finished rehearsing and the rewrites would happen in the office, I think a kind of a raucous place, and boys will be boys, and they would all hang out up there and throw ideas back and forth, and and maybe a couple of ashtrays. I'm not quite sure, but it was a wild place.
I can only imagine. Do you love that you guys got to exist? It wasn't just the 70s, but I mean, compared to what it's like now for so many people in show business, young people starting out with the assault of like social media and constantly having this other sort of life to live publicly.
It's so hard. I don't know how they can even. I mean, first of all, I would go into a room to audition for something when I started out, and there'd be like 25 other girls.
Mm-hmm.
And now there are 2,500
right.
submissions online. And so I just don't even know. I don't have any advice of how to deal with this new era, because it's like tweets and Twitters and you know, how many followers you have and all that kind of stuff. And when did that ever have anything to do with talent? I don't know. And so the whole thing is sometimes it makes me angry.
I can imagine.
Yeah, because then that isn't real art.
No. Oh. No, when people make demands on their celebrities or the creators of series, and you mentioned that too about WKRP and sort of the social issues that you guys were not afraid to back down on, were there, and you mentioned that there were some threats. Was that something that was throughout the series because there were racial issues that were touched on?
Oh, throughout the series, and I have to tell you that even from the network, because the network, you know, was, they're more middle of the road. So Hugh Wilson was a fighter, and I think that may have been one of the reasons that even though we were in the top 10, that we were canceled after 4 years because they just hated fighting Q. There was actually a big dinner for the MTM shows, every show that was ever made, even if it had six episodes, whatever, and we were not invited.
Really?
Really.
Oh, man.
We were the bastard child.
Well, not to us, you were not. You were our...
Exactly why I think it has endured more than any of the other MTM shows, except maybe Mary.
Sure.
The Mary Tyler Moore Show. I mean, always always wonderful and always memorable. But I think KRP is right up there with them.
Oh, no doubt about that. It is definitely one of the comedy legends. And again, you know, the role of Jennifer Marlowe, the character.
Oh my gosh, so innovative. I'm so lucky to have been a part of the kind of just passage of three girls being taken seriously.
Indeed.
It was nice, other than just running around in your swimsuit. And
Did I see that you and Linda Carter had you shot a pilot or began a series together?
We did a series called Partners in Crime.
Oh,
we were.
How did I miss this?
Wife of a detective who died and left us his agency as long as and his house as long as we would be detectives and be together. And we had a blast. We were in San Francisco, and Ian Heckert was the mother-in-law, and. Linda and I used to just laugh about the fact that we were rushing around up and down the streets of San Francisco in our little short skirts and high heels with guns.
That's tremendous.
I know. She's a dear friend, and I'm so glad to see this whole Wonder Woman resurgence. And if you ever get a chance, you must see her in her cabaret act, which is wonderful, she says. She started out as a singer, and I'm glad that she's getting to do this again in her life.
Well, you mentioned that you had started, and believe me, we're big fans. The tough, smart women of the 1970s, you know, have a lot to do with who I am. So, I do mean that, you know, between Charlie's Angels and Jennifer Marlowe and Wonder Woman. Well, because you made it great to be smart, tough, funny, and beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I feel so blessed to have been. In that generation.
Did you? Now, you also did Fantasy Island and Love Boat, didn't you?
I did, and I have a historical, like, one and only. Aaron Spelling and I were good friends. I did a television movie for him, too. But he did an entire evening of me where I'm on an hour and a half Love Boat that goes to an hour and a half Fantasy Island, and I'm the same person. So I'm the only person in the history of the Love Boat who's not happy at the end. And so she must go to Fantasy Island to gain happiness. And then they filmed two endings. So when Love Boat went into syndication, my episode was Happily Ever After. and the episode of Fantasy Island was Happily Ever After. So I had two Happily Ever Afters. But the actual, if you ever watched it in the whole thing, and I don't even know if that exists anymore, copies of that.
It right? must.
I go away sad and end up happy on Fantasy Island.
Well, you know, there's another host of WGN, that's his favorite night of television history, was when a character, and it, so it must be yours, that is on their way to Fantasy Island, or at least ends up going to Fantasy Island. So we are going to have to find that, because...
Oh, you will, because it's the only, I'm the only character that ever did...
That's tremendous. Well, I hope I have the opportunity to meet you when you are in town. I know that we've taken up so much of your time. You've been very generous.
Will you come over?
Of course.
Everybody should come to Wizard World and visit.
And you, and by the way, we are heard in the middle of the night. People hear us all over the country. So I know that you also have Wizard World appearances coming up in Nashville, in Austin.
I do in Nashville. And let's see, we'll also be in Austin.
Yes.
And I'll be with Howard Hessman, and that is in November.
Okay, so you've got those coming up, and folks can find you. Google Lonnie Anderson, Wizard World. You'll find the whole schedule. And I know, yes, I'm going to come find you, and hopefully, if you don't mind, I would love to take a selfie with you. It's just
that sounds perfect to me.
And I take these. I have a series of them called Selfish Selfies. I take them till I look good, but I try to make sure everyone else does as well.
We'll just make sure. We'll say, okay, now we look good. All right, that's good.
I give people approval. I ask them if this is okay. Yes, I promise.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to it.
It's been a delight talking to you. I've had the goosebumps and the chills the whole time I've talked to you. I'm such a big
fan.
I think I held the...
So happy, and I can't wait to meet you.
I look forward to it. Have a wonderful day. And by the way, happy belated birthday. I wanted to make
Thank
sure.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks very much. Have a lovely birthday. It's just a whole birthday month.
It is. Yes. I'm a Leo as well, so it's my birthday this month. So, rawr.
Oh, see, and we're such interesting people.
Have a great day. Safe travels, and we will see you in Chicago at Wizard World.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was Lonnie Anderson. She'll be at Wizard World August 24th. It begins. Go on the website, find out the schedule, and we will talk to her again soon if she'll have us. More after this on 720 WGN.